From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Marcela Garcia, in for Kelly Crossley. On Fridays, Kelly likes to talk about stories that went under the radar. Today, we talk to someone who is covering and commenting on those kinds of stories. I'm talking about Julio Ricardo Varela. He is considered one of the most creative and influential voices in the Latino sphere. He is the brains behind Latino Rebels, an online destination that covers everything from sports to politics to music. Julio Varela, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Why don't you start by telling us how Latino Rebels was born, when, and more importantly, why you launched this website?
Sure. It was just an idea. I was watching The Daily Show one night, probably March of 2011. Mm-hmm. And I was just saying to myself, why is there not like a Latino Daily Show? Things that I want to watch. Not that I love Jon Stewart and I love The Daily Show, but there's a lot of topics that aren't being covered, a lot of stories that aren't being covered. And so I said to myself, because I was doing personal blogging, I was doing my own blogging, I was doing some independent journalism on my site, on julioarvarela.com, but I said, there's something here that speaks to the bilingual, bicultural experience of what it is to be a U.S. Latino in the 21st century. So for me, I said, you know, Jon Stewart's a rebel. And I have a lot of friends who are rebels who happen to be Latino online, right, on Twitter, on Facebook, and they're really good friends of mine. Let's create Latino Rebels. The next day, I secured the URL. I created a private company, an LLC. I called it Latino Rebels LLC. And then I called all my friends and I said, hey, I decided to do this. Do you guys want to help out? And everyone just said, yeah. And so we just started creating stories of our world, and we were just kind of turning this into a side hobby, and we were just kind of saying, you know, there's a lot of stories that don't get covered, whether it's in politics or music or sports, that speak to this experience. And we're kind of tired of how Latinos are portrayed in mainstream media, so might as well create a page and do it ourselves.
Right. How do you define rebel? What is a rebel for you?
That is the best question. I get that question all the time. And that's why I think our page, Latino Rebels, is so appealing to a lot of people, because rebel means a different person. So, for example, for me, it means someone that kind of questions everything. And you can question everything from any political stripe. So we don't try to say, well, we're a progressive page or we're kind of middle of the road, or although a lot of people paint us that way. We kind of like looking at everyone who questions the status quo, the mainstream. So for us to be a Latino rebel, you don't even have to be Latino. That's right. Just a name.
And that's what people don't understand sometimes, because you're a collective of Latino and non-Latino,
yes,
thinkers, bloggers, activists, humorists. So it's a combination of all these things.
We have poets. We have writers. There's so many great people that have been there from the very beginning. Charlie Vasquez, you know, Tony Vargas, Brett Nemiroff, my dad, who's helped out because he's a marketer. We have a great photographer, Rebecca Beard, who covered Occupy Wall Street last year. Hmm. So she would go down every day and take pictures for us. And so what was really interesting about that is that the Occupy movement was like, what is this page, Latino Rebels, covering us? But they were realizing that this is a story that our readers wanted to know. So it wasn't like a Latinization of,
right,
of our page. So we just started covering stories. And the name is the name, because that's
who we are. Right.
But we're so much more than that. And so, for example, we have a contributor in Oaxaca, in Mexico. Her name is Jen Wilton. And she covers stories for us in Mexico in English.
Right.
And it's great. But, you know, Jen's not Latina.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
That's what I find so interesting about your site, that people immediately see Latino Rebels and they immediately identify you as, oh, they cover Latino stories. Oh, they're all Latinos and they must cover Mexican or Puerto Rican. And your stories are so diversified. You guys cover Mexico, you cover Puerto Rico, you cover the U.S., Latin America,
right,
Venezuela, everything.
Right.
And again, non-Latino. all this at a national stage, but you also cover local stuff, right, from Boston. You've been in Boston how long?
Oh, I've been in Boston since 1986, when I got into Harvard in 86 as an undergrad. And I have lived here for 27 years, except
You're
for...
You're a Bostonian now.
Yes, I am. I'm a Bostonian, and I can still see the skyline from my home in Milton, because I cannot be as far, you know, that I have to see the Prudential Center. So I am a Bostonian. True.
So tell me about your background a little bit. You said you're a journalist. You were writing for the Crimson at Harvard, correct?
Yeah, I started in 1986 as a sports editor for the Harvard Crimson as a writer, and I became sports editor, and eventually I became a contributing reporter for the Boston Globe. So I thought I was going to be the next great sports writer.
You can still do it.
I can still do it, right. And so being a journalist is always, you know, I learned to be a reporter. But I went down the road of educational publishing because at the time there was a need for Spanish language materials for kids who were learning in bilingual classrooms in Texas. So I kind of went down that road. But I've always been a journalist. And what's really interesting the last 4 or 5 years is the economy and everything surrounding the economy has forced a redefinition. So the marriage of trying to look for different opportunities plus social media – because I started social media to promote my brother, Fernando Varela, who's singing with David Foster now.
Oh, okay.
So we decided about 4 or 5 years ago to be like, hey, let's use this Twitter and Facebook thing. And next thing you know, we were selling his CDs on iTunes, and we were meeting Latinos all over the country. We were seeing that Latinos were oversubscribed in social media, that they're actually one of the largest demographics in social media. And it was very interesting. I saw a lot of brands not get it because everyone wants to homogenize us. And I was like, no, that's not our world. So this evolution has kind of come, you know, I always look at different steps in someone's progression.
Right.
And now we're just – it just works naturally. And we hit social media at the right time. And now I feel – you know, I've met so many amazing people. And so many people that have supported us from the very beginning. We have an incredible Facebook community. They're like the coolest, most engaged
fans. That's what I know.
They're incredible.
Right. It's very remarkable. In the world of now social media, you can say that it's over exposed. Everyone is on Facebook. Everyone's on Twitter. But your fans are so engaged that it's amazing.
They're incredibly loyal. They'll tell us when we do a good job. They'll also tell us when we miss the boat. And what one of the things that we do, because we have about 20 people, so we have about 20 admins. So that's one of our, you know, I'm giving people some secrets, the social media advice. That one, I'll give you that. But we curate a lot of content.
Right.
And our diversity comes from our curators, our people that we support each other. We're a family, and we bring in a lot of stories every day. And we'll post stories just to post them. People think, oh, you're endorsing this story. No, we're not. We're just trying to force a discussion or foster a discussion or a debate. And it gets really intense. But what's really interesting about it is people are very respectful. So we get a lot of, you know, young Latinos from LA, for example, and they're talking to non-Latinos in Iowa. And that's not happening a lot online.
Right.
And so we've been able to bring that world together, those two worlds together, and we get some fascinating threads. And what we also decide to do is that we engage our audience. So if they tell us, wow, why did you post this story? We say, well, you know, we did. So we missed the boat. We're sorry. And it's amazing. People just want acknowledgement.
Yeah. It's, you know, something that it's not very clear when you look at Latino Rebels because it's the voice is so clear that I thought it was just you.
No.
And I was like, how does he do it?
I do a lot.
Do you have a day job or how do you keep this going?
I right now, this is my focus. I do have several clients well. I work, I do a lot of consulting and I do a lot of social media consulting and work in education. But I also do this for passion. I love it.
Right.
And my family can make fun of me sometimes when I'm on the line at 11 o'clock at night. But
right.
If it's a good story, you got to publish it.
Right. Well, you guys have experienced incredible growth in less than 2 years. You're going to be 2 years next year.
Mm-hmm.
You've been named to Fox News Latino's top 10 list of young Latinos in politics to watch next year.
That's crazy.
It is, right? How does that make you feel? Does it add pressure?
It was when I saw that list and the fact that I was above Senator Rubio. I was a little bit. Those are the things that kind of say to myself, what is going on here? I mean, we always felt that this was going to hit, but we never believed it was going to hit.
You know what I'm saying? We just kept doing our content, and we just kept on saying, we know that this reflects what it is to be a U.S. Latino in the 21st century. We know we're hitting the right demographic. Now, to be named that is, I guess, 2013, I'm going to have to do things.
Right.
It's kind of
weird. Step it up a little bit.
I have to step it up now. You know, you're on a list.
Right. I'd like to read for our listeners a bit of what they said about you from Fox News Latino. This year, the Latino rebels moved to fill the void by taking politicos, brands, and media organizations to task for underrepresenting or misrepresenting Latinos, especially in politics and advertising. As entrepreneur jefe, Varela represented the Latino rebels on Face the Nation, NPR, Univision, Forbes, and in the New York Times twice, right? Yeah. So the mainstream media now is actually listening
yes.
and trying to figure out how to cover this community, this growing Hispanic community. How do you think they're doing, the mainstream media, in covering us?
I would give them a D.
Okay? Well, that's...
You know, I wouldn't give them an F yet. I would have given them an F probably about 2 years ago.
Mm.
I think the election, which is, you know, I sit back and everyone's like, oh, the election, the Latino vote. I'm like, welcome to the party. Like, we've been saying that.
Right. Give us some examples of why a D. Tell me when they completely failed and who.
I mean, let's talk about advertising, for example.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is something that you do on your site.
Oh, it's something
you call
that
them out.
We do. And you know, it is kind of what I want to say about that is we do it because we believe that there's a lot of multicultural agencies that are doing it for the wrong reason. Like, for example, do we really need Clorox Latino? I mean, seriously. do we need to have a campaign about Clorox when it's, you know, Clorox Latino? It's Clorox.
It's Clorox in you every
know?
Language.
And so there's a multicultural agency out there that is telling Procter & Gamble, you know, there's a growing Latino demographic and you need to spend your ad dollars on this. And so let's create this Clorox Latino brand. And I, as a Latino consumer in the United States, go, why? I mean, for me, Clorox is, you know, that's like Pampers. You know, it's just part of the culture as I was growing up in Puerto Rico. Just sell Clorox. You know, and so I think there's a lot of bad advice being given because there's this strong desire to hit the 50 million demographic.
So they rush and they
And they rush. And then it comes across as either pandering, ignorant. It comes across as insulting. I mean, the whole Mayan apocalypse branding, Jell-O. I mean, end of the world, we're selling Jell-O, Dikembe Mutombo with Old Spice about the Mayan apocalypse, TGIF Fridays. Let's have a big end of the world party.
Right.
I mean, it's not even accurate.
Right.
National Geographic Español talking, you know, having a Twitter party about the end of the world. How exciting is that? Like, that's really going to get me to Twitter.
Right.
And so what's really interesting is a lot of our fans, and we have about 25% of our Facebook fans come from Mexico.
Hmm.
And they're like, thank you, thank you, thank you for doing this. Thank you for doing this. So we, you know, ad agencies just need to.
And the media, too.
Oh, well, we can talk about the media and politics and.
And politicians for this year.
One of
was
my dear friends, Esther Cepeda, called it Hispandering.
Hispandering. That's a great word.
And Stephen Colbert calls it the Pander Fiesta. So one of the things that we were doing the last year is that we were looking at how Republicans and Democrats were looking at the Latino vote. You know, one of the biggest misconceptions that people have about us, and, you know, our critics can say, well, you know, we're just Obamaistas. You know, one of the reasons why we created the page, to be honest with you, is that there were a lot of us that were disillusioned with the president and his immigration policy. And we were not the first people. I mean, you look at a lot of, you know, immigration rights groups that were out there 2 years ago. You have Jorge Ramos from Univision calling the president out as breaking his promise. So there was a time, I believe, where a lot of people were actually looking at the Republican Party as a viable alternative to President Obama. Now, we started looking at how the Republican Party was really missing the boat with the Latino voter, like incredibly insulting. But we also were looking at times when the Obama administration, whether it was the connection to chimichangas or where Vice President Biden was talking about, you know, at La Raza, was talking about, I forget that speech, but he was like, you know, the Republican Party, they only want to see your papers. So that was kind of like a both, you know, it was kind of a dual part of it.
And it was happening in both sides.
And there was such a misperception of the U.S. Latino voter. Now, granted, you know, when we were talking about the Romney campaign, they just didn't do a good job at all. I mean, Obama got a lot of the Latino vote because the Romney campaign just was horrible.
They did worse than Obama campaign.
And, you know, people, when I say that, people are like, oh, you're such an Obama supporter. And I'm like, no, it's just that you missed the boat.
Right.
And you just have to look at the numbers. And so we do a lot of that. We do a lot with politicians that really have gone over the top with immigration advocates and immigration rights and comparing, you know, immigrants to dogs. And there's so many stories. And people are like, well, you call out a lot of Republicans. I'm like, that's what they say.
Right.
You know, if a Democrat said the same thing, we would be calling him out as well. But, you know, the ignorance that's going on with not understanding the Latino voter in the United States, you know, they better wake up.
Right.
You know, anyway.
What about the media? What do you think is their biggest challenge, in understanding or covering Latinos?
I think, first of all, media is not diverse. You know, that's a big, important reason. People say to us, why are you getting the attention that you're getting? Because we're creating authentic stories because we have a diverse, like, group of contributors. You know, I write about Puerto Rico because I've studied it. Mm-hmm. I've covered it on my blog. I get covered in El Nuevo Día. I have people in Puerto Rico in both political parties who read my blog. So I understand Puerto Rico. You know, I have contributors who are from Mexico or from Chicago or from Los Angeles. They understand the issues. I have a great contributor, Christian Henriquez, Mr. Christian on Twitter, who's from Phoenix. You know, we get stories from Phoenix that speak to what's going on in Phoenix with Sheriff Joe, with Brewer, with all that. We're part of that world. We have the Libro Traficantes in Houston, the book banners, Tony Diaz. We get those stories. So we are diverse and we're authentic. Media, mainstream media, is not. It's very simple. And I do believe that they realize that. And it's really interesting. So instead of them hiring staff, they're coming to pages like ours and saying, what stories are here? You know, we consistently get mentioned in the HuffPost. We consistently get mentioned in NBC Latino. I'm a contributor for NBC Latino. That was really interesting that they started picking up our stories. And then they said, you know what? We'd like you to be a weekly columnist because you're telling stories from the rebel side that our readers want to read. That to me was really interesting validation. But, you know, these stories get picked up because they're good stories.
And on that note, let's talk about the stories.
Sure.
This year, I'd like you to tell us, you know, one of the biggest stories of the year, one of the recent ones actually was the Baylor University girls Penn State.
Sororities. Right. Sorority girls gone racist.
Right. I understand you guys actually broke this story.
We broke the Baylor story.
Tell us how that happened.
It's a very interesting, you know, this is called the perfect storm of media. We got an image, two images from Baylor, from a Baylor student
Describe the images.
The images, the first was a Facebook cover photo. So, like, if you go to your Facebook profile, your cover photo is public. It's part of the public internet. So anyone can search it. And it was a sorority. It was five sorority girls dressed in sarapes, mustaches. They had
fake beards.
They had fake beards. They had black shoe polish. They had sombreros. And they had, you know, they had green card badges.
Wow.
And then there was another one where they were going to a party and they posted it on Instagram and they were scaling the fence into the party and they said something to the effect of like, entering the party, crossing the border fence.
Best entrance ever.
The Baylor students that gave it to us, they were both Latina students. And they said to us, listen, I am very, you know, this is just shocking for us, especially at a place like Baylor, which is a Baptist school, and they spend a lot of, you know, they invest a lot of time in being good Christians. And so they gave us the pictures, and it was about 11 o'clock at night on a Friday, and we did a little bit of digging, and like journals. I said, wow, this is an interesting story. This is the kind of story that we do. So we ran the story around 11 o'clock at night. It crashed our server. Wow. We got like 10,000 hits like in an hour.
Impressive.
And then what happened is that we called Baylor on Monday, and Baylor was very, very cool. And they were like, wow, we don't know where the pictures are from. Anyway, the girl got rid of all the pictures. So we were the only people with the pictures at the time.
Because you took a screenshot.
We took a screenshot. And these were public pictures.
Right.
You know, one of the things that people need to realize about social media.
It's there.
You know, it's there. So you got to be careful. You look at Randy Zuckerberg's sister that.
Right. Complain that, about that, the privacy. Complain, yeah.
It's kind of ironic. Don't post it. If you don't want people to see it, don't post it.
That's the biggest irony ever.
So anyway, so. But what happened on Tuesday is that Penn State, a similar story happened in Penn State, which, because it was Penn State, took off in the national media.
And it was linked to the Baylor University.
And what happened is that we became sort of the sub-story.
Right.
Because they were like, it's not the only example of sorority sisters going racist. Look what happened in Baylor like 3 days ago. So what happened that entire week, by Friday, our image was on the Today Show. So in a week.
Uncredited.
Uncredited, of course. But I already told that to my NBC editor. I was like, that's okay. I'm good. Because it was still the Today Show. And it went viral. And local Texas media picked it up. Everyone picked it up. We got so many emails telling us to go back to Mexico, get over it. But we got a lot more support from our readers and from people that said, I really felt like I wanted to say something. And you said a lot of things that I wanted to say. So I want to thank you for doing it. And that was just one of the many examples. That's actually one of our top stories this year.
Right. Well, basically because you gave voice to somebody that was bothered by this image and it just took off.
Right. And what's very interesting, because our community is so diverse, we get the, wow, that's really good. That's really racist too. Why do you guys continue to do this? Get over it.
Right.
And I, you know, there's a part of me that doesn't, you know, I don't buy the get over it argument, because I look at the Latino experience right now and I compare it to the African-American experience maybe 60, 70 years ago. The Irish experience 150 years ago, they just didn't have social media.
Mm.
It's the same type of where, you know, the immigrant assimilation theme. And I think we're just at that point where we're still trying to figure it all out, whether it's media or whether it's within our own community. And we just happen to be able to share stories that speak to it.
So it's just a ripe moment right now.
I think so.
Now, how do you deal with all these negative comments? You must get, obviously,
you have thick skin. You know, after a certain point, what I tell people is, you love us or hate us, you have to read us.
Right.
And what I tell our own group is, you know what, we're just going to tell our stories. And if people are reading them and if they tell us to go back to Mexico, then at least they're reading us.
Right.
But I would say the overwhelming majority of our readers and our community and our members really support our page and believe that this page is doing a lot of interesting work. We'll always get the critics and the cynics. And, you know, I don't really pay attention to them anymore. I mean, we've been spam trolled. You know, there was one person that created 7 profiles and just continued to comment on our page. And we're like, dude, it's the same URL. Like, we can
tell.
So we had to block him because it adds nothing to the dialogue. And us, we're a private media company. I mean, we have policies just like everyone else. There's a certain point where if you're not adding anything to the debate, like, move on.
Right.
But we do a lot. But a lot of our debate and our discussion is very, you know, people like to get into it and we love it.
Another story that was big for you guys or that you have been commenting and posting a lot is the Puerto Rico statehood.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
My own personal thoughts.
Well, you're from Puerto Rico.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I mean, I don't know how your viewers, I'm sorry, your listeners. I'm not moving into radio. You know, there was a big plebiscite that happened in November on election night, the same night where the president got elected. And
talk about under the radar, because people didn't realize this.
Well, you know, Puerto Rico is under the radar.
Right.
And I think that's another reason why, you know, one of the reasons I got into blogging was because I wanted to tell stories of Puerto Rico from the island in English, because they're not being shared in the mainland. And there's 8 million Puerto Ricans, 8 million in on the island and on the mainland. You look at the Florida results.
Right.
Puerto Ricans elected President Obama. That was the deciding vote. Anyway, so there's a big plebiscite happened. It was a non-binding plebiscite, meaning that Congress doesn't have to do anything.
Right.
But long story short, there was two parts to it. One of them, it was the first time in the history of the island where people rejected the Commonwealth status. And the second part of the vote was, well, if you reject the Commonwealth status, what do you support? Statehood, independence, or freely associated state, which is a very complex – I don't want to get into inside baseball. And anyway, statehood won. Okay. But the most complicated thing about all this is that Puerto Rico makes, you know, makes the United States – you think we're partisan in the United States? Puerto Rico is like partisan on steroids because everything's based on political status.
Right.
So the governor now, the governor-elect, he's pro-Commonwealth. So he told everyone not to vote in the second point. So there's like 800,000 votes that didn't get counted. They went blank. But the mistake he made was blank didn't count as a vote. So by not voting in the second vote, statehood got like 65% of the vote. So now what's happening now is that statehood in Puerto Rico – it's actually being carried into D.C. and it's becoming an issue. There's a lot of like the president had to talk about it and the White House had to backtrack. And there's a lot of Puerto Ricans that are saying, well, you know, we delivered Florida for you, President Obama. Like, let's start getting this process about statehood going. Now, personally, I am not for statehood. I don't know what I am for
you
now.
Don't know. Isn't that part of the problem?
That is part of the problem because we are the most complex, you know, I call it the Puerto Rican paradox.
Right.
We're just all over the place.
Which is also the reason why it's so challenging for people to understand Latinos and
yes.
How and why it's a big mistake to just
Well, it's the perfect example. When you go back to advertising and media, the campaign that doesn't work in New York might work in L.A.
or Texas,
or Texas or wherever. But you look at different groups. You look at Puerto Ricans. You look at Cubans. You look at Mexicans. But then you also look at the growing demographics from Central America and South America. And Latino is an umbrella term because, you know, and there's people that we can debate left and right that hate it and people that say, you know, if we all truly united ourselves, like we would be a force in this country. But I also think that that's all being discussed and dissected and some people are for it, some people are against it, and we're still trying to create sort of what the Latino identity is in the United States. It's not media created anymore, and I think that's the difference. The difference is it's, you know, pages like Latino Rebels and other pages are defining that new Latino identity, and that's why media is not getting it. And now they're starting to come to us to say, oh, wait a minute, we missed the boat. And now we're coming to the Rebels page to find out more about it. And I think it's because it goes back to the diversity issue. It's the fact that we're more authentic. We know we're kind of closer to the, you know, we can talk the talk.
Right. 2013, what do you think are the top stories for Latinos? Which stories are going to be big next year?
I feel like I've been saying it for the last 3 years. Comprehensive immigration reform, CIR, as it's known in Washington circles. It just needs to get figured out. It doesn't define what it is to be Latino in America, but it's a pretty big heartstring issue. That just needs to get defined. I mean, I think there's a lot of skeptics still out there with the president. Who are saying, well, we got you your second term. So you didn't do it the first term. Are you going to do it this term? You know, Senator Rubio is talking. Everyone's talking a game, but they're also not focusing on it. It had a big focus and obviously the tragedy in Newtown and the fiscal cliff. So it's shifted focus again. But I do think that that's going to still be a very important issue. I also think the issue of the Latino identity is going to continue to be covered by the mainstream media. I think it's going to start getting more nuanced and we're going to be, you know, the hope is that we're going to be at the forefront of that conversation.
What about the future of Latino Rebels? Where do you see it going?
The future of Latino Rebels, we're going to be doing, we're very excited about next year because we're going to be doing our own show, our own radio show for iHeart Radio, for Clear Channel. I'm going to be co-hosting with my dear new awesome friend, Charlie Garcia, who is a CNN contributor, Telemundo correspondent. He's incredible, and we're going to be doing our show. We're going to present the world of the Rebels on Clear Channel on iHeartRadio, and that's going to be coming out January, February. So we're pretty excited.
Good for you. We're very much looking forward to the future of Latino Rebels. Thank you so much for joining us. I've been speaking with Julio Varela. He's the creator of the media enterprise Latino Rebels. Julio, thank you so much. Coming up, we'll preview First Night Boston. I'm Marcela Garcia in for Callie Crossley. You're listening to Boston Public Radio.